and welcome to Revitalize and Replant with Tom Rainer, where we equip churches to move from declining to thriving by pointing them to a new future and a new hope. Revitalize and Replant is brought to you by the North American Mission Board.
I love that introduction. She
does such a good job.
She does.
She's consistent every week. Just boom.
Yeah.
Hits her marks every week.
I have, you know, this is episode number 66, Mark Clifton, and I have never thanked Thelma for that introduction. And she does. She's so consistent.
She lives next door to you, right?
No, she does not live next door.
No, Amy is his next door neighbor.
I got you.
That's
not
right.
Amy, but Amy, and not the other Amy.
And not the Amy that you work with at Southeastern.
Okay.
It's that Amy that works next door to me. So no, Thelma's been doing this from episode one,
and
she does a good job. So grateful to her, grateful to our producer, Akeem Morella, who is here, and our director, Amy Jordan. And we have the Mark Clifton.
Akeem just finished a tour.
Yes, he did. He did his finish career. And Jonathan Howe. Don't want to leave him off. But this is a special episode because it's number 66, and we have cupcakes.
We do.
We have cupcakes for number 66. Okay. We'll get cupcakes for number 69 or 670 or 70, 68, something like that. But she's been doing that introduction for 66 episodes, and I've never thanked Thelma for doing so. So thank you, Thelma. You are doing a great job introducing this. Mark, have you ever had anyone say, our church cannot revitalize because, fill in the blank? You think it might be worth covering some of those excuses?
I think it'd be really worth covering some of those excuses.
Well, then we'll
hear that. We hear them all the time. I mean, it's, hey, did you know that my church is different?
My church, oh yeah.
Did you know that my community is different?
Right, and my congregation's different. My leadership is different.
Yes.
And just so many things are different, and we are unique.
Yes.
You know, when there are 350,000 Protestant churches in the U.S., there is another church very similar to yours. There are many churches. So anyway, to the North American Mission Board, thank you as always for not only sponsoring this, but for giving us Mark. I mean, you know, the Ray Bolts did that song, Thank You for Giving to the Lord.
And
I want to tell the North American Mission Board, thank you for giving us Mark Clifton.
I actually think they're fine getting rid of me for a while. I think they like it when I come over here and I'm not bothering them.
I get that. Who is our questioner of the day, Jonathan?
It's from Harrison. And Harrison asks,
who was your favorite Beatle?
Well, my favorite Beatle was Ringo Starr.
Okay, George Harrison was mine.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah.
Why?
He was quiet. He was an introvert.
Yeah, didn't like the spotlight. So
yeah.
I had this discussion the other day. Where were we going? Midwestern?
I believe we're going to Midwestern Seminary, and we're in the car.
We're in your
neck of the woods, and we were on a Beatles channel.
Yeah, I accidentally found the Beatles channel.
Yeah, and they started playing George Harrison solo, My Sweet Lord, and I preferred him more in the Beatles than I did soloist.
Well, I just like Ringo Starr because he was the least talented, and I can identify with that.
The Beatles said he was the most talented. The other three did.
Well, I know.
What
do you think? That's what people tell me, too, but I don't believe it.
I think Paul was the most talented. Now, some would argue that John, because when someone gets killed, you know, they think that that person is automatically the most talented one. But I really think that Paul was. Paul played the bass. He played the electric guitar. He played the acoustical guitar. He wrote, with Lennon on many songs, but he wrote a lot of songs without Lennon as
Maybe
well.
Maybe it's my age, but I prefer Paul McCartney and Wings to the Beatles.
No way, Jose.
I do.
This is really helping Harrison.
Okay, let's get I'm sorry, Harrison. I just thought of George for just a minute. Let's go to Harrison's question.
Are we ready?
I'm ready.
Okay, thank you. All right. Excuses are about all I hear in my pastorate. Everyone seems to blame everything else for anything that goes wrong. I try not to join in and make excuses, but sometimes I fall into the trap. What are some of the most frequent excuses you hear in church replanting and revitalization?
I bet we got seven here, but I bet Mark Clifton will be able to add 15 or 15.
We had to stop the list at seven. We could have really kept on going here.
Yes, we've heard a lot of these.
And Harrison, thanks for your question. You're going to get a copy of Autopsy of a Deceased Church from Dr. Tom Rainer, and we should send him Scrappy Church now.
That's good.
That one's out. So and also Reclaiming Glory.
Reclaiming Glory by Mark Harrison.
Mark
Clifton.
Mark
Clifton.
Yeah.
Mark Clifton.
Ringo Starr.
And maybe even Mark's upcoming bluegrass release that he will be.
That's true.
I don't know.
Whatever.
I'm just making things up now.
Okay, this is actually a very good question by Harrison. By the way, I had someone post on Facebook that they didn't leave their email and they submitted a question and they didn't get a book.
Oh.
I mean, didn't leave their address, I should say.
Okay, well, I'll have to get that.
I think it was a couple of weeks ago. So for whoever did that, I'm sorry, but
we'll get it.
We'll get it. Okay, Harrison, John. Yes. Nothing.
Yes. So we've got seven deadly excuses in church revitalization. These are the most common ones we probably hear. Number one, there are not enough people to reach in our community.
Yes. Isn't that often what we hear? In other words, there's not enough people to reach that we would like to reach, that would like to come to where we are. There's not enough. And it's been, 5 minutes into this, and I'm already going to use this phrase. There's not enough low-hanging evangelical fruit for us to get.
All right, so we need to explain this.
Huh? All right.
Explain the low-hanging evangelical fruit.
We want some of the listeners want to know the definition of evangelical when you say that.
Talk to Ed Stetzer. He's the one that seems to be the voice of evangelical. No.
But do you mean like evangelistic fruit?
No. What I mean.
Or you mean transfer growth or conversion growth?
Transfer growth.
That is evangelical. Then.
Transfer growth. I'm talking about transfer growth. Low-hanging transfer growth.
That is low-hanging evangelical fruit.
It is.
It's not evangelistic fruit.
Evangelistic fruit. Lapsed Christians, people that just maybe fell out of the faith for a while or
new to the community.
A half a dozen who might move into the community every year and are actually looking for a church.
Okay.
But they're not going to probably look at yours. They're going to look at the larger churches that have more to offer.
Gotcha.
And they're probably not going to look at yours. But there was a time when they might have looked at yours because it was the closest one geographically to them. But
it had the right denominational label.
And often when they say there aren't enough people to reach in our community, what they mean is there aren't enough people who are already converted, looking for a church that could easily just become part of our community.
I recently read an article by Bob Smietana, really good article, on unchurched people in rural communities. I wish I could cite that article to be able to share with you exactly all the details of it. But his point was so very well made. His point was, okay, I want to talk to you about some churches that a church, you know, he'd go church after church that's in a community of 800, the whole county, the whole county, and they have 200 in attendance, 25%. They never said, in fact, the pastor never said, there's not enough people in the community to reach.
There are people everywhere.
There are people everywhere in the unchurched population, whether you're in the Bible Belt or whether you're in the Rust Belt or whether you're in the Left Coast, wherever you may be, there are people who are not in church, lots of them.
But they may not be receptive initially to you.
Yes.
And so that's where you have to work at it and do some other things. But absolutely, there are people everywhere. But again, we're so accustomed to just because we have the denominational label, we have the building, we have the service times out there. Why aren't they coming? There's just not enough people out there to be reached.
All right. Number two, the people in our community are not like us. So maybe they're there, but they're different.
You know, we say in replanting, one of the real danger signals of a replant that you're really in danger of death is when you begin to resent the community for not responding to you as they once did. There was probably a time in that church's life when the community responded relatively well because they were probably somewhat homogeneous to the community. But communities are not stagnant. They change constantly. And that really frustrates a lot of churches, obviously, because churches don't change and adapt.
Really?
Yeah. I figured that out all by myself. And so what happens is, absolutely, they're not like us, and we mistakenly assume that the church is supposed to feed off the community. We mistakenly assume that the community is there as a resource to grow the church, and actually it's just the opposite. The church is there to bless the community, whether they are like us or not. And seriously, I love what Sam Rainer says. Your church's address is not an accident. I mean, the sovereign Lord has brought these people, like you or not like you, right to your doorstep, and they are there to be reached.
Mark, you're talking about Son Sam's Church, West Bradenton in Southwest Florida. If you look at the composition of that church now, ethnically, racially, age-wise, it is such a hodgepodge. And then you turn around and you look at the demographics of the community, it matches perfectly.
Yeah.
They're reaching all ages. They're reaching multiple ethnic groups, racial groups. They're cross-generational church. Sam has had a few churches that have said, don't you want to come to our church? Because they've seen what God's doing at his church. And he just says, where can I have it better? This is like heaven on earth.
Right.
To have all of these people groups, and it's reflecting the community.
And when you do that, you have to lean into the gospel, because you can't just be an affinity of people who get along because they all have the same worldview and they all are the same age and they all have the same economic and ethnic background. They're very diverse. And so mm-hmm. the only thing that works when you get into that kind of situation is to have Christ as the head of the church and really focus on that. And it is a wonderful place when that takes place and when that happens.
But I think also we need to remember that just because, if it's possible, that the community is like the church, that doesn't automatically mean they're going to come to your church.
No, it doesn't. But, you know, one of the main areas where we're finding the majority of declining and dying churches in our cities is in the inner suburban ring. Mm-hmm. And those are areas that are very complex to understand demographically.
They're not quite urban. They're not quite suburban.
No, and they're not at all homogeneous. And there's all kinds of ages, all kinds of ethnicities, all kinds of economic backgrounds, all kinds of worldview, literally just within a few blocks of your church. And so, and since there's no Saddleback Sam and Saddleback Sally, there's no identifiable person in that neighborhood. And so that makes it a challenge. And sometimes the challenge is so overwhelming. Churches just say, well, they just don't want to come and nobody wants to be here. And they're not like us. And again, if you resent the community for not coming and not responding to you, that's a serious sign of that you're very near death.
Absolutely. And this number three, Jonathan, is the one of the most common.
Yeah, I was going to say, this would probably be number one if we rank these by the most common thing. We don't have enough money.
Have you heard that one?
Does any church have enough money? Have you ever met a church where they're like, we've got way too much cash, we got to do something about this,
you
we
know,
give it away?
What I do find are dying churches, some of them have quite a bit of money put away in CDs and things, but they're afraid of the future, and so they're making decisions based on fear. We can't spend that money because what if the air conditioner goes out, or what if we have five or six Sundays after, you know, nobody can come to church and give any money. And so they're always living in fear. So some churches have money, but they don't think they have money.
Yeah.
And they don't act like they have money.
This is a gospel situation, too. It's a gospel reality, I should say. Do we really believe the Bible? Do we really believe that our God can supply all of our needs in Christ Jesus? Do we really believe that? If we say we don't have enough money, you know what we're saying? No. We don't believe the Bible.
I would agree.
Yeah, okay, totally. Thank you. I was just looking around to see if I got any affirmation on that. Akeem, put your mic on so you can speak.
I'm just directing traffic. You guys are driving this thing, not me.
No, man, I would totally agree with that. And I think
that doesn't mean you spend it recklessly, though, right?
I mean, that's correct.
Yeah.
Well, and I really believe, as I've said on this podcast before, man, resources follow activity. And so if you'll go out there and start doing something and start ministering to people, but oftentimes people don't do anything, we don't have the money to do it. It doesn't take money to begin to do some things that you need to do to get to know your neighborhood and to begin to serve your neighborhood. And when you start doing that, you'll find other churches and other entities will always gravitate toward activity, toward gospel activity, and you'll have more. There are more resources in the kingdom than you could ever possibly imagine.
Cattle on a thousand hills.
That's right.
Wow.
Wow. That's profound.
Biblical.
I knew you were here for a reason.
That's beautiful. Beautiful.
Mocking me. All right. Okay. So the next one is one I think, and I'm going to ask you guys, and don't take offense to how I asked this question. Was this an issue 30 and 40 years ago as much as it's an issue in the last 20 to 10?
I'll answer secondly, but I'll let Mark go first.
We can't compete with the bigger churches.
Of course it was not that. I don't think it was a different 30 or 40 years ago in many ways. I think we were always feeling like there was maybe not so many bigger mega churches around, but there were always the more high profile, prestigious churches that could offer all the programs and the complete. But then again, what do you compete for what? You're competing for the converted growth. You're not competed for the unconverted. You're not competed for the broken and those you need to go and share the gospel with and do the hard work of really planting the gospel in their lives. Yeah, competing with other churches for converted growth.
Yeah.
You know, normative sized churches have always struggled with that. When you've got the large church in town that has all the programs and all the great music and all the great children's events and, you know, Six Flags Over Jesus for their children's area and all that kind of stuff. I mean, you know, we've always compete with that when you go look at our children's area. But I promise you, I really do believe this. And my experience, I think, has proven it out. People who do not know Christ and are unconverted, that's not what attracts them to a church. What attracts them to church is someone who loves them and gets involved in their life and spends time with them and walks with them and shares Jesus with them. There is no competition when you're talking about reaching people who don't know Jesus. You're not competing with another church in town.
I would say, yes, he is correct. Mark is correct that this issue has existed always. I will say it has been exacerbated lately. Now, here's why. The county seat church of 20 years ago had a stability about it that it does not have today, and therefore it was not as worried about the big church. Now, county seat may have been a big church. The rural church of 20 years ago had, many of them had a stability within the community that they do not have today. The instability of the communities has caused a lot of these churches to lose their population base or the people that are like them, and therefore they're looking at the big churches with a more jealous eye than they used to. So I would say Mark is right, but we have made some transitions.
I also think that we have all these churches that are in decline, 60-70%, however you want to cut the degree there, but a lot of the churches that are growing, I think, are probably growing because they're picking up the people from the declining churches that are bailing and running off the deck of the ship. And so I think we're seeing that more than we would have seen it 30 years ago.
Yes. Good.
All right. Number five, we would be fine if we returned to 1985.
It's not usually expressed that way.
Parenthetical note, some churches never left 1985.
Some churches aren't there yet.
Sorry.
What year was Back to the Future?
1985.
It was.
That's right.
It really was.
I thought that was the case.
Yeah.
It's rarely expressed 1985, but we would be okay if we just had our hymnals back. We would be not anti-hymnal. Please hear me on this.
We love hymnals. Lifeway.
We would be okay if we had fill in these programs that most people wouldn't even know if I started mentioning them.
Bring back Sunbeams.
Oh. Yes.
Way back with that one.
Yeah. I didn't know you were old enough to think about Sunbeams.
Remember where I worked.
Oh, yeah. That's true.
You know, and seriously, my father, who pastored for 40 or 50 years and was successful, near the end of his life, he was a member of Warnell, where I was. And he told me one day he could never pastor today. And I said, well, of course you could. You preach. You love people. You're an evangelistic soul winner. Man, you're the greatest guy I've ever known, and you're called to the pastorate. He said, Mark, I never one day in my ministry sat in my office and asked myself this question, how do I do church? He said, it was all laid out for us. We knew exactly how to do it. We had Sunday school, and there was very few even, he said, there were very few even literature opportunities. It was basically two or three brands of literature or curriculum you would pick. It was one hymnal that we sang out of. The choir always wore robes and came in and sang an anthem, and we stood up after the offering and sang the doxology. We had Sunday night training union and Sunday night worship. We had, you know, Wednesday night, all the RAs, GAs, like you said, ACT teens. We had women's circles. We had brotherhood.
This is Southern Baptist language listeners.
I'm sorry. It is Southern
I know exactly. Baptist. I know this
it
church.
It is January Bible study. It is M night. I mean, I'm throwing all that deep, deep, deep.
Summer revival. Summer.
But the point of all that is, there was a time in all denominations when those kind of programmatic approaches worked really well in one particular part of the population that was a growing part of the population. And that is no longer the case. And so when we say it would be better if we were back in 1985, what people mean is we just work these programs and they just seem to work.
That's a good point.
Mm-hmm. And that doesn't work anymore.
The program-driven culture is gone.
Exactly. Wow. We've been talking about that for a while. And,
yes.
And some churches maybe have enough momentum around their programs that they still work, but at some point that's even going to run out, I think.
Yes,
and, I would agree.
And like to quote Rick Pitino loosely, 1985 is not walking back through that door. So,
Rick Pitino, really?
People will get it. So
okay.
Trust me. Okay. Maybe not. Number six.
Maybe this episode doesn't go into the Rainer Hall of Fame. I'm just, you know, they can't all go in there.
Okay.
I don't know.
Number six.
George we have Harris. A few minutes to pull it
Hey, up. Y'all took 20 minutes on the Beatles, all right? I can get one Rick Pitino joke in there. All right? We don't have enough young people in our church.
All right, here's what I always say when they say that. A lot of times they tell me if their pastor's retiring or leaving, they say,
we need
a young preacher. And I tell them, look, if all it took to turn a church around was a young preacher, I wouldn't have a job. I mean, it'd just get you a young preacher and just say, hey, you know, all you'd have to put policemen in the parking lot to handle all the traffic from the lost people who heard you had a young preacher. And they can't wait to get there because
I love it.
You know, I'm thinking, what, you want a 90?
We have a young Facebook, young preacher now,
youngest preacher in town.
That's right.
And once another young one comes in, you fire your preacher and get one younger.
Yeah. And end up,
we got the youngest.
You know, now we're
no diaper changed yet.
Right. So anyway, but the point in that clearly is that just getting a young preacher is not going to change the culture of the church. And so when they say we need young people, here's the question I ask them. At what point and what kind of decisions did you make that made it seem like this was not a church where young people could flourish? And if they say, well, young people just don't want to come to church anymore, you can say, well, look, I'll put you in the car and I'll drive you all over the city on Sunday morning and I'll show you lots of churches that are filled with young people. They just don't want to come to your church.
Exactly.
And that's not an accident. You made some decisions consciously that made this seem like a place where young people couldn't flourish. And until you own that up, you're not going to change that culture and you're not going to reach young people by just bringing in a young pastor.
I bet if we did a statistical study, a correlative study, we would not find a correlation with young pastors and the demographic age, younger age of the church. I bet you would not. I bet that it would probably be just a 1.0, no correlation, or zero, I should say, well, zero correlation.
In my line of work, when they call a young pastor and don't make any other changes, here's what they do. They say, first of all, now you're young, it's your job to get young people to come in here. And if you don't do that, we're going to fire you. Secondly, yeah, you can't forget us because we still pay the bills. So you got to love us and care for us, and in some ways you got to baby us and take care of us, but you also have to reach young people. And so you set him up in a way where he's not going to succeed.
Yeah.
In either one of those.
Yeah. I totally agree. Well, we could stop right there. But we have one more. No one will come to our rundown facilities.
Well, I've used the Mark Clifton story so many times about the
mid-century.
Not only the mid-century, but the birthday party room.
Oh, yes.
I've used the birthday party room so many times. It's just such a good illustration about what you can do with the facility.
If you will take a facility, even if it's run down, but you let the community use it, they will love it and embrace it. And I think it's just an excuse to say because our facility is run down. There again, most of these objections, you're trying to reach the converted growth, and you're trying to compare your facility with the facility of the bigger and more perhaps successful church in some way, so that the converted people who are looking for a church will look at yours and say, well, it's run down. But if your church is the only church in the community that has a birthday party room all painted up really cool with all kinds of creatures on the wall and stuff, and you let the neighborhood come in and use that for free, or try this on for size. Almost every dying church I've ever seen has a kitchen and a fellowship hall that is almost never used. So then you just let the neighborhood know, look, if you've got a family reunion, a family gathering, you want to do an anniversary for your grandma and your grandpa, and you can't fit everybody in your house, you can come and use our kitchen. You can come and use our fellowship hall. Now you let some, there's some church members' heads that are about to explode. But nonetheless, that's what we do. It doesn't matter how run down the facilities are, if you're generous with them and you give them to the community, community is going to be thankful for them. And I have seen churches that put up signs that say, you know, we know our restrooms are kind of scary, but we choose to spend our money on blessing our neighbor and our community rather than right now fixing up these facilities. So I think that is not an excuse that really carries any weight at all. If you really use the building as a ministry point.
I did one consultation where this was an excuse.
Only one.
Well, one was a good excuse because they had yellow tape around part of the building, and it said, do not cross condemned area. Would have been an excuse.
Well, that's better than do not cross
crime scene.
Crime scene.
Exactly. I was going to beat
you. That's where I thought you were going with that.
Oh, my word.
But this is a real thing. Like you mentioned, the community using the facilities, like the fellowship hall or the kitchen. I know of a church who has a super expensive mobile kitchen that they put together that they use about four times a year. Mm-hmm. The pastor is trying to get them to use it to do stuff in the community. And the people who run the kitchen, you know, air quotes there, they refuse.
Look,
and it's become a burden on the church because they won't use the resources that they already have.
Yeah. If you got rundown resources, look, I know it's expensive to fix up a building. I've been there. So when I was at Warnell, we didn't have money to fix everything up. But what we, like in the entrance where people came in, we put up some really cool photos of our church and its ministry, its actual ministry that was taking place in the last few weeks as we served people, high school kids, food, as we did different things. So when you walk in, if you see these big, large, and you can get them relatively inexpensive now, you can get them made. You see big, large color photos of your church actually serving people right there in your community. It takes away from the fact that the building looks run down and is neglected. These things look current, they're bright, they're colorful, and they show something going on right now.
Yeah.
Okay.
Good ideas.
All right.
Good ideas.
That's right. And resources will flow to that activity.
Resources will flow to that activity.
That's right. Thank you, Harrison George, for this Great question. We'll be sending you a book. And as always, thank you, North American Mission Board, for sponsoring Revitalize and Replant. Yep.
Revitalize and Replant is sponsored by the North American Mission Board and churchreplanters.com. More than 10% of churches in North America are at risk of closing, and the North American Mission Board is committed to reversing this trend by decreasing the death rate of existing churches and simultaneously increasing the birth rate of new ones. To learn more about what it means to become a replanting pastor or to explore resources for replanting and revitalization in your own church, visit churchreplanters.com.
Thank you again for being with us on episode number 66 on Revitalize and Replant. Stay tuned, because every even episode not only includes Jonathan Howe and me, Tom Rayner, but it also includes Mark Clifton. And so we'll see him in episode 68, and we'll see you with Jonathan in episode 67. Thank you for being here as we revitalize churches together.
Thanks for joining us today on Revitalize and Replant with Tom Rayner. If you'd like to learn more about re-energizing your church to reach your community, subscribe to the podcast on iTunes or Google Play, or in your favorite podcasting app. For additional resources on church leadership and to join the conversation online, visit TomRayner.com, where we are growing healthy churches together.